Turn to 2 Kings, if you will. Where'd the glitter go?
It's gone.
Oh, it's gone. You know, I'm sorry I made fun. I wasn't making fun of it. I actually liked it. We can see you at night, you know. You should ride your bicycle. If you ride along, you should wear that at night. 2 Kings. I just really enjoy people. People are like my favorite people. Or you know, I just really, and I like faces. I do. Even people, you know, up here, those of us that are stand up here, it's not unusual for certain people you get familiar with, like Martha Wagner, for example, who think they know you so well that they occasionally just make faces at you during a message. My wife has done that. My wife will make faces at me sometimes, and I give her the dickens when we get home. 2 Kings, so we're going to start in chapter 4, but let me just little name association, because it looks to me like I'm preaching to the choir, and I love that. You know that? How many of you know that phrase? Yeah, preaching to the choir means that I'm preaching to all the people that probably need it the least. Okay, that's often the case. So when I say Gehazi, first of all, who recognizes that name? Okay. No, raise your hand. I'm not going to put you on the spot. Okay. Three or four of you. Okay. So nice name for a kid, right? Gehazi. Maybe, I don't know. Much better than Jezebel for a girl, you know. Gehazi, okay? You're going to come up with... Okay, so those of you who recognize the name Gehazi, do you recognize it, do you remember it in a negative light or a positive light? Negative, okay, yeah. So what I want to talk about, I want to track Gehazi, and please don't panic, because we're going to look at some things about kind of related to Gehazi. But this isn't really all about Gehazi, because it would not be good for everything to be all about Gehazi, because he was a fellow both, he was up and down in his faith. So we're going to start in chapter 4. I want to talk about real people, both named and unnamed, okay? Real people. The Bible's full of real people. And I'm saying that because many times I make that kind of remark to myself. I didn't grow up thinking the Bible was full of real people. I went to church and I heard the gospel, but it strange as it sounds, like we didn't carry our Bibles to church. We figured they had them there. That's the way a lot of people think, okay? Now, I think that was mostly my family, although looking around anyway, but Jesus got to me in spite of the fact that, by the way, did you know the largest grouping of Baptists of any kind? Anemic Baptists. Yeah, it's a huge anemic. They're iron poor, anemic means your blood's, anyway, that was supposed to be funny. So you laugh after I tell you it's supposed to be. I think that's patronizing. I'm not sure. You don't want to? Okay. Yeah, really. God's church, especially in the United States, let's just admit it, is full of people unlike you. Okay? Honestly, there just aren't too many people that want to come to a Sunday evening Bible study anymore. Okay? And I really commend that. Part of that is because people like me will wear folks out, which I don't believe in. I like to be concise and meaningful, and go home, because Sunday night is homemade pizza night at my house. Okay, no, you're not invited. The Bible is full of real people. It's full of us. Okay. So here's let's. My emphasis is, and I just, so I come into a lot of times coming to preach, and I know what I want to say. I'm going to confess to you, I'm one of these guys that I don't I don't teach or preach from a manuscript. If I did, you would know it, because I would sound like I was reading a transcript or something. But I was just struggling until this afternoon what I want to do with Gehazi. Wally, you mentioned, I have a deal where you can, I always feel like I'm doing a commercial when I say this. In 15 minutes a day, you can read the Bible through in a year. Doesn't it sound like a commercial? But it's actually true. I have a guide, and actually it's in, I don't know if you get Open Windows or not, but there are many of them around. It is composed of usually two Old Testament chapters a day, a chapter in Psalms or Proverbs, and one chapter in the New Testament. I promise you that'll get you through in a year. Okay? Now, 15 minutes, that's just the reading. I would suggest that you spend some time, you know, praying and reflecting on that. But it's a shame that we just don't read our Bibles. Please don't hear that as a scold. I think God will convict you of the things that you need to do. So I've been reading through the Old Testament. I'm actually up into Chronicles now, which consists of a lot of names, most of which I wouldn't name my kids or grandkids. But Gehazi fascinates me because I think I have, if not known him, I think I think I could have been Gehazi. Okay, so let's pick him up in chapter 4 of 2 Kings and going to kind of read a little bit. First of all, what happened is in the beginning of chapter 4, we have the Shunammite woman. Shunam was a town, one of the tribes of Israel, and Elisha had done an amazing thing with the Shunammite woman. You maybe remember this story. She was they were having a famine, and he told her, go borrow all the vessels that you can from your neighbors, and anyway, they'll just be every vessel you can, and all the oil will be filled up, and it worked, and it was wonderful. And that takes us to verse 8. And it says, there came a day when Elisha passed over to Shunem, where there was a prominent woman, and she persuaded him to eat food. And so as it was, as often as he passed by, he turned in there to eat. So this was a Shunammite bed and breakfast, okay? And she said to her husband, behold, now I perceive that this is a holy man of God passing by us continually. Now, first of all, note, we're talking about real people. You got to like Elisha, who inherited the prophecy from Elijah, because he apparently didn't make a big deal out of who he was. But she noticed it. She says to her husband, please, verse 10, let's make a little walled upper chamber, and let's set a bed for him there, and a table and a chair and a lampstand, so when he comes to us, he can turn in there. I like that. He can turn in there. One day he came there, and he turned in to the upper chamber, and he was resting. Now here comes verse 12. Here comes the first mention of Gehazi. Then he said to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite woman. And when he had called her, she stood before him. Now let me note for a second. I always have to refer to scholars. I check things with people a lot smarter than me. And usually a lot older, and many of them deceased, but they're good commentators. And Gehazi's probably a boy, okay? At least a very young, maybe teenager. He's Elisha's servant, okay? And it was a pretty big deal. His family had no doubt given him up to the service of this prophet. And so he's with, and he's benefiting with Elisha to these amenities that he's getting from the Shunammite woman and her husband, okay? And so he says, I want you to go get this woman. And verse 13, he said to her, he said, tell her, behold, you've been careful for us with all this care. What can I do for you? What would you be spoken to for the king or to the captain of the army? And she said, this is the Shunammite woman, I live among my own people. So he said, well, then what is to be done for her? And Gehazi answered, he had already spoken to her, truly she has no son and her husband is old. So she had everything she needed, but she'd never had a son. Okay? So he said to her, Elisha said, call her. When Gehazi had called her, she stood in the doorway, and Elisha said to her, at this season next year, you shall embrace a son. And she said, oh, no, my Lord, don't joke about this. Okay, I'm paraphrasing. No, my Lord, O man of God, do not lie. Do not lie to your maidservant. You see, this woman had all her needs, but she had a broken heart because she'd never had a son. Takes us back to Sarah, doesn't it? Okay? Now, Gehazi's in the center of this for our discussion. The woman conceived and bore a son at that season the next year, just as Elisha had said to her. Yerah, okay? Now, notice one thing right away. I'm trying to build something of a picture here. So we got Elisha and Gehazi, and we have this wonderful, generous, kind, godly woman who's just the Shunammite. She has no name. Isn't that interesting? Okay, I don't know quite why it's interesting yet, but I think it's interesting. This is what I love about the fact that we are people who believe that God is not just talking to or through me. He's talking to you too. Okay? So your thoughts on why she throughout this she won't have a name except the Shunammite woman. Okay, now look what happens next. Many of you remember this. When the child was grown, the day came that he went out to his father's and to the reapers. Okay, and his head started hurting. Verse 19, he says, "My head," and the father said to the servants, "Carry him to his mother." When he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her lap until noon, and then he died. And she went and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door behind him, and she went out. Then she called to her husband and said, "Please send me one of the servants and one of the donkeys that I may run to the man of God and return." And he said to her, "Will you go to him today? It's neither the new moon or the Sabbath." Those were the special times when you usually summoned the prophet. And she said, "It will be well. It will be okay." This unnamed woman, her son has died right on her lap. She tells her husband, "I'm going to go see the prophet who told me this boy was going to be born." And then she says, "It will be okay." I'm not going to make a comment about that right now, but I believe her. It's going to be okay. I believe people who have told me at crises in my life, it's going to be okay. It isn't right now, but it's going to be okay. Aren't those wonderful words? I was 11 years old. I tell the story often, but it just keeps coming up. It meant so much to me. My father worked at Alcoa Aluminum in Lafayette, Indiana, and he loved his job. He was a welder. He was a maintenance welder, but he was so good, they were always putting him on special projects. And so they put him on one project one time with one of his best friends, whose last name was Eberly. I promise you, I thought all we ever called him was Eb. It was Wendell Eberly, who lived in Pine Village up in Warren County, drove into Lafayette to work at Alcoa. He was with my dad. And those of you, most likely men, maybe some of you women, they did something really crazy that day. They took about an inch and a half pipe and they crammed it full of welding rod. They were going to try something different. They had to superheat it with the welder. That you can change the settings. I grew up with this, and that pipe exploded. And hot metal went all over my dad. And this is before OSHA was very careful about checking things and burned my dad. Dad did that foolish thing. He panicked and started to run. And his friend Eb, who was half his size, tackled him and rolled him. Probably saved his life. Dad was burned over three quarters of his body. Spent 3 months in the hospital. That night, while all that was happening, I was playing Peanut League baseball. And I wondered where my parents were because they never missed a game, but I had a baseball game to play. And I rode home with our neighbors and my best friend's dad, Bob Burton. We got out of the car at their house instead of mine. And he sent his two boys, who were my age and 2 years older, out to the yard. He said, "You boys go play. I have to talk to Roger." And he took me in the house, and I will never forget. He sat in a chair, and he stood me up because I was only 11. He put his hands on my shoulders gently but firmly, and he said these words, "Your daddy has been hurt very badly." My knees crumpled. So that's why he was holding me up. And the tears started to flow. And sometimes when I tell this story, they still do. And then he said this, "But he's going to be all right." That's people, isn't it? So this woman was not, I mean, this is wonderful. And it's marvelously, hopefully typical. There are those of us in this room who've had worse. But it's going to be all right. Heaven either is or it ain't. It either is or it ain't. I'm an old English teacher. I'm telling you, it either is or it ain't. And I would rather live my life as if it is, even if it turns out it ain't. But it is. And she said, "It will be well." Then she saddled a donkey and said to her servant, "Drive and go forward. Do not slow down the pace for me unless I tell you." So she went out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. And it came about when the man of God saw her at a distance, he said to Gehazi, okay, you'll see in a minute why I'm focusing on Gehazi. Gehazi's at the center of this, but he's not the hero by any means. Elisha said to Gehazi, "Behold, yonder is a Shunammite." By the way, how many of you grew up saying yonder? I did. Good. Okay. "Yonder is the Shunammite." And you can hear Elisha. The scripture has kind of formalized it, but I wonder what's happening. "Run down to meet her and say to her, 'Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child?' And she answered, 'It is well.'" It is well with my soul. "When she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught hold of his feet, and Gehazi came near to push her away." The disciples did that once or twice to Jesus, didn't they? Tried to push the children away. You know, it's interesting. Gehazi is just he's a very real person. He thinks he's doing right, but he's not. He has no idea how merciful and compassionate God is, particularly here now through his prophet. And he says, "Let her alone, for her soul is troubled within her, and the Lord has hidden it from me. She's not told me." Then she said, "Did I ask for a son from my Lord? Did I not say, 'Do not deceive me'?" Is this lady happy? No, but she's hopeful. Point: mixed emotions are part of ordinary humanity. She's hopeful. She's angry. I've been both at the same time. We have laughed and we have cried at the same time. We have mixed emotions. She does too. Then he said to Gehazi, "Gird up your loins, pull up your breeches. Take my staff in your hand and go your way. If you meet any man, do not salute him. If anyone tries to stop you, do not answer him. And you go and you lay my staff on this lad's face." And the mother of the lad said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." And he arose and he followed her. Then Gehazi, guy keeps coming up into these stories, doesn't he? Gehazi passed on before them and he laid his staff on the lad's face, but there was neither sound nor response. So he returned to meet Elisha, and he told him, "The lad has not awakened." Then Elisha came into the house. Behold, the lad was dead and laid on his bed. So he entered and shut the door behind them both, and he prayed to the Lord. Do you know what that means in Hebrew? It means he prayed to the Lord. Oh, God! What is happening here? He prayed. And he prayed. Verse 33 is much longer than one verse. He prayed. And he went up and he lay on the child. He put his mouth on his mouth and his eyes on his eyes and his hands on his hands. And he stretched himself on him, and the flesh of the child became warm. Now, I don't care what. I mean, you can say, okay, so what we know, he gave him mouth to mouth. I don't think so. God just brought him back to life. The creator of all natural universe may very well use natural or supernatural means. It doesn't matter to us if he restores the living, right? Then he returned and walked in the house once back and forth. And he went... He went up and stretched himself on the boy again, and the lad sneezed 7 times. Gesundheit, 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 Gesundheit. And he opened his eyes, and he called Gehazi. And he said, call the Shunammite. So he called her, and when she came into him, he said, take up your son. And she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground. She took up her son and went out. Now, isn't that a beautiful story? And there's lots of side things to learn. There are questions left in here. You have them, I have them. I'm not trying to cover everything. The first thing is, there's Gehazi, part of an awesome story, right? And Gehazi's a young servant to this prophet. And how exciting for him to witness this. Don't you think that this was like... I mean, I'm thinking one thought that Gehazi should have been entertaining is, man, I want to be like Elisha when I grow up. Did it happen? Well, let's see. Let's turn now to chapter 5. The next chapter. Okay, so now we have another interesting story. And these are long stories, and there's so much that could be said... But I'm going fast. Now, there was a guy named Naaman, captain of the army of the king of Aram. These people were fierce. If you go to the Psalms, you'll find out that David and other people prayed that God would absolutely, utterly destroy them and would dash their children's heads against the rocks. They must have been awful people for David to pray that God would do that to the Aramites. He was a great man with his master and highly respected because by him, notice something, the Lord had given victory to Aram. You notice that the Lord there is all capitals? Already we see in God's book that that God gives victory even sometimes to Israel's enemies. We knew that though, didn't we? Because they had to learn something. Anyway, but this man was a valiant warrior, but he was a leper. Now, the Arameans had gone out in bands and taken captive a little girl from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. Two more people with no names. Little girl from Israel. Little girl. I just picture this little girl. I'm a father and a grandfather of girls. And I've got a little girl 6 months old and holding in Austin, Texas. Can't wait to see her again. But a little girl was taken, very likely taken as a baby, but probably not. I shouldn't say very likely, because she knew that there was a prophet in Israel. So she was little. And she waited on Naaman's wife, and she said to her mistress, I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of leprosy. And Naaman went in and told his master, saying, thus and thus spoke the girl who's from the land of Israel. Then the king of Aram said, go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel. Okay, so far we have this captain of the Aramean army. He's a leper. And look who is able to influence him. A little girl servant with no name. Are you starting to catch something about the no-name people? God gets a lot done with people who aren't named, not just in Scripture. So anyway, he departed and he took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothes. Folks, that was a chunk of change. You probably have some footnotes in your Bible. A talent was a lot. I'm trying to remember. It was about a ton. I don't know. He took a lot of change with him. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel saying, Now, as this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent Naaman my servant to you, that you may cure him of his leprosy. And it came about when the king of Israel, verse 7, when the king of Israel read the letter, that he tore his clothes and he said, by the way, when he says this, you can tell he's not close to the man of God. Right? This is probably Jehoram. And so here's the king of Israel, who apparently isn't close with the man of God. He says, am I God to kill and to make live alive? And this man is sending word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? But consider now, he's just trying to provoke me to a quarrel. And then it happened, verse 8, Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, and then he sent word to the king saying, why have you torn your clothes, king? Now let him come to me, and he shall know that there is indeed a prophet in Israel. So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots, and he stood at the doorway of Elisha. Anyway, I'm going to suffice it to say, scan through there. Elisha says, you got to dip yourself 7 times in the Jordan. And Naaman said, no, I'm not. My rivers back in Aram are much better than this river of yours you have here, this Jordan thing. Verse 13, then his servants, without names, came near and spoke to Naaman, and he said, my father, had the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean? So Naaman went down and he dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Okay. Now we're looking at people with no names, and we're focusing on Gehazi. Now look what happens, and this is where many of you remember, or those of you who said you did. When Naaman returned to the man of God with all his company, and came and stood before him, he said, behold, now I know there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So please take a present from your servant. But he said, as the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will take nothing. This is Elisha speaking. And he urged him to take it, but Elisha refused. And Naaman said, if not, please let your servant at least be given 2 mules load of earth, for your servant will no more offer burnt offerings, nor will he sacrifice to other gods, but to your Jehovah God. What a breakthrough. In this manner, may the Lord pardon your servant. When my master goes into the house of Ramon to worship there, and he leans on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Ramon, when I bow myself in the house of Ramon, the Lord pardon your servant in this matter. He's asking Elisha, please understand, I've got to take the king into his pagan sanctuary. But please give me some of the earth from here, because this is where my heart is now. And Elisha said, sure, go, take it. Verse 20. Did I mention butts this morning? But Gehazi, this young man, think of what he's seen already. In fact, there's a lot of things that Gehazi had seen. Most of all, though, he had witnessed the person of the prophet Elisha. His words and his mercy and his grace and his righteous temper. Gehazi should have been a lot more like Elisha. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, thought to himself in verse 20, behold, my master has spared this Naaman. Can't you just hear how he said it? This Naaman, the Aramean, by not receiving from his hands what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw someone running after him, he came down from the chariot to meet him, and he said, is everything all right? And he said, all is well. My master has sent me, saying, behold, just now 2 young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and 2 changes of clothes. And Gehazi's conscience was going, liar. Gehazi's conscience was going, liar. That's happened to us. And Naaman, who was still just reverberating from all his gratitude and being healed, said, be pleased, take 2 talents. And he urged him and bound 2 talents of silver in 2 bags with 2 changes of clothes and gave them to 2 of his servants, and they carried him before him. When he came to the hill, he took them from their hand. He took them from their hand so, you know, it would look like he was bringing them himself. And he deposited them in the house, and he sent the men away, and they departed. And but when he stood before his master, verse 25, and Elisha said to him, where have you been, Gehazi? And he said, your servant went nowhere. And his conscience is going, liar. Then Elisha said in verse 26, then he said, did not my heart go with you when the man turned from his chariot to meet you? Is this a time to receive money and to receive clothes and olive groves and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female servants? Therefore, said Elisha, the leprosy of Naaman shall cleave to you and to your descendants forever. So he went out from his presence, a leper as white as snow. We're not quite done with Gehazi. Poor Gehazi. How does he feel now? How does he feel? If we were sitting in a circle, if I were with my college students at our old BCM house where I was for years, I would be asking, how do you think Gehazi's feeling? Well, he felt pretty good until he realized Elisha knew what he did. Because when Elisha realized that when he realized Elisha knew what he did, he knew that God knew what he did. We have a capacity, we do. I believe even as saved people, when we are entertaining our old nature, we still have a capacity for denial. And we do things as if God's not seeing, God's not there, God doesn't care. How do I know? Because I'm human. Poor Gehazi. How long did he then have to live with? He has leprosy now, right? But oh my goodness, now he has to live with his guilt. He's wealthy. There are a lot of people living in this world who are wealthy and leprous. Not with skin disease, but with an inner creeping, I'm just not well. Physiological manner of living. You look at people carefully who are celebrated, especially, pardon me, your Hollywood stars and people like that. I have not been around any of them personally. But I know this, they will not go out in public until everything is looking perfect. And they have managers and agents to make sure they don't say anything wrong. I don't have a manager, do you? I just, right here, thank you, Wally. So what happens to Gehazi? Turn to chapter 8. And I knew this. But in studying, I thought, oh, wait a minute, we're not done with Gehazi. And in 2 Kings chapter 8, the Shunammite woman with no name shows back up. Her son had been restored to life. There had been a famine in Shunem, so Elisha had advised her and her husband, and if he was still alive, and her son, to go to the land of the Philistines, but they had come back. Now Elisha spoke to the woman whose son had been restored to life, arise and go with your house and sojourn wherever you can sojourn, for the Lord has called for a famine, and it shall come on the land for 7 years. So the woman arose and did according to the word of the man of God, and she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines for 7 years. Now watch verse 3. And it came about at the end of 7 years that the woman returned from the land of the Philistines. And she went to appeal to the king for her house and for her field. This was just pretty typical procedure. By the way, the land of an Israelite, and at this point, it's very likely her husband is dead since she's the one appealing to the king. So she goes to the king, and this king is almost certainly a king named Jehoram, and he was not, again, this is the northern kingdom, right? It's not going to be long. None of the northern kings, not one of the northern kings ever really walked with the Lord. Now, the king, verse 4, was talking with whom? Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, please relate to me all the great things that Elisha has done. Now, I'm standing here telling you truthfully, I think any theory or idea you have as to why Elisha was talking with the king, were they companions in guilt? Because Jehoram, again, had done plenty of things that had not been reconciled or forgiven by God, didn't care. Or, in God's mercy, had Elisha sent him to the king? I don't know. But here's what happens. It came about as Elisha was relating to the king how, as Gehazi was relating to the king how Elisha had restored to life the one who was dead, that behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life, all about that, he appealed to the king for her house and for her field. I'm sorry, I got lost. The woman returned and appealed to the king for her house and her field. And she said, and he said, Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the very woman, and this is her son whom Elisha restored to life. When the king asked the woman, she related it to him. So the king appointed for her a certain officer, saying, restore all that was hers and all the produce of the field from the day that she left even until now. So there's lots about this I don't know, but here's real quickly some conclusions I have. First of all, Gehazi gets a name, and he doesn't take very good care of it, does he? Did you know that Zacchaeus, that wee little guy, things ended up very well for him, right? Did you know his name literally meant pure and righteous? We ought to take care of a good name. Gehazi didn't. Though I think he's getting a chance here at the end. Secondly, the people that you really have to love and respect, but you have to pay attention, are those who don't get named. The Shunammite woman. The little girl. Why, even Naaman's wife. There are unnamed people. Do you remember that little statement? Little bitty statement in Hebrews 11:38 says there are men and women of whom this world is not worthy. All around us. Can I tell you, a lot of us in my calling and profession, I hate to tell you this, but I bet you know it, we strive to have a name. Like to have it on a poster. Coming to your town or your church. And the world can mislead us. We want to have a name. We want to have a name that the world honors. But don't worry. Most of you aren't known that much around Linton. Or around the world for sure. But God knows your name. And lastly, life is so full of ironies, isn't it? So full. I want to believe, this is my last conclusion, I shut my Bible to show you I'm done. I think Gehazi at least began to reach some healing and some redemption here at the end. Some closure. Gehazi had lied twice to a man of God. He'd become wealthy with stuff that wasn't even supposed to be his. He just had to have this huge burden. I like to believe that this was beginning of Gehazi turning his heart back to God, because what was he doing? He was singing the praises of Elisha, wasn't he? And if David, not your pastor, King David, if David can be called a man after God's own heart after the things that he did, not the least of which were adultery and murder, God in his mercy can save any one of us. Let's pray. Father, I confess to you lots of words, several stories. But Father, what I want most is for you to help each of us understand that we should take care of the name that you've given us, whether anyone else knows it or not, because you do. And Father, help us to live out the rest of our lives knowing that you know the very hairs on our head. Father, as the girls sang this morning, you know our weaknesses and everything about us, and you love us more than we can imagine anyway. Thank you for your word. Thank you for this day. Help us to go into this week and live for you. In Jesus' name, amen.